Now that our basic foundation of breathing is in place, and we've begun to recognize some of the sounds that other people make, as well as some of the sounds we make ourselves, it's time for us to learn and adjust the five unique building blocks that actually shape the voice: volume, tone, pitch, pace, and melody. I've developed a system that allows you to quantify each of these elements on a scale of 1 to 10. And throughout the program, I'll show you key vocal settings to use in particular situations. You'll hear just what I mean by, say, a 9 on the volume scale or a 7 on the melody scale. And I'll show you how to work with these five variables to achieve incredible things with your voice and your communication skills. Volume first. And volume is a key to sounding confident and authoritative. But most people have only a vague concept of how loud is loud enough. I believe that we've become a nation of whisperers and mumblers. The other day, I go into the dry cleaners to drop off a few dress shirts. As I'm standing in the line, I notice this young man in front of me that's dressed very boldly with bright colors and lots of big, eye-catching clothing. He has a hat with huge letters printed on the front. It was impossible not to notice this guy. He was physically sending out the message, "Notice me! Look at me!" Then, another young man enters the shop dressed almost exactly like the first guy, with bright colors and wild, multicolored hair with tons of product in it. And they recognize each other instantly. And the conversation goes something like this.
"Hey, how you doing?" "Oh, sir. Nothing." "Okay. Later." "Oh, later."
I thought for a moment to myself, what planet is this? And what language are these two speaking? I didn't understand a single word. Now, here were two guys that, based on their physical presence, were obviously not shy or reserved. They looked like wild and crazy guys to me. And yet, when they spoke, they could just barely make sounds that were audible. They were so soft and uncharismatic. The sounds just trickled out in a whispery tone that commanded zero attention and zero respect. Their volumes were so low that I believe neither of them actually heard what the other one was saying. Now, because their conversation was nothing more than a casual acknowledgement that both of them existed in the same building, nothing bad happened. But if a father ran into that same building looking for his lost daughter and sounded like the two of those guys, well, there could be serious consequences. Nobody would listen or care because they wouldn't even know what they were supposed to listen and care about. As a nation, we speak too softly. Believe it or not, one of the reasons is the computer. We can do just about all of our daily communications without ever speaking to anyone. I can email people all day and conduct everything from real business to monkey business. I can set up an entire company or create a series of relationships with no sound. I can share my deepest thoughts and feelings with someone on the other side of the planet, and they may never ever get the pleasure of holding my hand or hearing my voice. And though I do wholeheartedly admit to loving the convenience of email, I also realize that it unfortunately allows us to hide behind our computers and have a lot less verbal communication. Given the fact that none of us, including me, wants to box up their computer and stop doing email, can't we just agree to make the real communications we have sound better? You know, when you think about it, it's really not that easy to hear someone who's speaking to you. I mean, look where your ears are on your head. If you're standing in front of me speaking, your sound has to move toward me and then go around the front of my head until it reaches my ears. So let's be honest. If God was really interested in communication, he probably should have put at least one of our ears in the middle of our forehead. That not being the case, or the perfect aesthetic, we need to achieve a much greater volume level. When someone comes into my studio and I work on volume, they're usually surprised by how loud I ask them to become. I tell them to pretend that the person they're speaking with is approximately 10 feet away from them. Now, they need to get their voice to powerfully resonate 10 feet away from their lips. And by the way, I'm not trying to create a nation of screamers. I realize that there's nothing pleasant or influential or charismatic about shouting or being shouted at. That's not at all what correct volume is about. To make the perfect volume, you need to control two key variables. One, the amount of air exiting the mouth. And two, how thick the cords are vibrating. So let's begin with the first. Holding your fingers a quarter to a half an inch from your mouth, count out loud from 1 to 10 and get louder as you go. Listen to my demonstration. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You try it. Did you feel the airflow change as you got louder? Did you notice how much more air hit your fingers when you increased the volume? Good. Try it again. Count from 1 to 10 with your fingers in front of your mouth, trying to feel more air hit your fingers as you go from 1 to 10 and get louder. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Next, we need to make the cords vibrate in a thicker position. Say the word can and stretch out the A sound. Can. Do you feel the extra vibration in the back part of your throat? Well, that's what it feels like when you make the cords thicker and allow them to vibrate more. It's kind of like the sound we did when we were doing that bratty sound, except it's a little more gentle. Can. Now, great speaking can only happen when the right amount of air meets the right amount of cord vibration. So volume is not only about increasing the air alone. If it was, then Marilyn Monroe or Ginger from the TV show Gilligan's Island would have sounded like they were screaming. And volume is not about thick cords alone. It's only about the play between the air and the thick cords that we can truly find the perfect volume. Let's do another exercise to help find that balance. What's your favorite color? Mine's red. I want you to imagine a solid, thick line of your favorite color going right from your mouth straight out horizontally to a wall that's about 10 feet away. Now, as the color hits the wall, I want you to imagine that it simply bounces right back on that same solid, thick line until it hits you right in the middle of your forehead. Now, repeat the following sentences one by one after me and try to imagine that the words are riding out on top of that solid colored line. Keep the volume up and don't let any word be softer than any other. You understand what I mean? You imagine the solid stream of color with the words riding right on the top, sitting on top of it. Here we go. My words are riding out on a solid bed of air. I'm pretending that the sound is reaching out 10 feet in front of me. Great speaking happens when the right amount of air meets the right amount of cord. Again, try those lines one more time, picturing that the sound you're making, the words you're shaping, are actually sitting on top of that solid stream of air that's coming out of your mouth and going 10 feet away. My words are riding on a solid bed of air. Make sure you're bringing your stomach in while you're trying this. Big breath, fill up your tummy. Stomach coming in. I'm pretending that the sound is reaching out 10 feet in front of me. Big breath. Great speaking happens when the right amount of air meets the right amount of cord. Good job. As you recited those three lines, I'm hoping that you allowed yourself to be louder and stronger, at least more than you normally do. One more thing. Let's try those three lines again, but this time I want you to put your fingers in front of your lips like we did before and make sure that you're sending a lot of air out as you speak. If you're not, remember to unlock and relax your stomach muscles. As I told you before, I've attached a number scale from 1 to 10 for all 5 of the building blocks of voice. So let me demonstrate the scale for volume. 1, very low. Almost can't hear me at all. 2, a little louder. 3, a little louder. 4, a little louder than that. I'm speaking at this volume. As it starts to get to 5, I start to sound normal. This is of normal volume. When I'm at 6, I'm a little louder than I normally would be. At 7, I'm starting to get even louder than that. At 8, I'm getting much louder. At 9, you're starting to think, why is this guy mad at me? And at 10, you're thinking about leaving the room. The next building block is melody. Star presenters have discovered something singers have long known. By pulling in the resonances of the high and low parts of the voice and moving freely between them, they can bring words to life. Passion and intensity don't come wrapped in monotone. A brain hearing the words, "These are incredible results, our best year ever," also listens for cues in the music behind them. So if I was to set that statement to the theme from Chariots of Fire, "These are incredible results. The best year ever. I'm so proud of you." When I do that, there's a congruence and an excitement that moves the listener. But if I said that same phrase and backed it with a funeral march, "These are incredible results. Best year ever." So what happens? Well, playing it like a funeral march in those heavy, unvarying tones, the music clashes with the message. Now, whether or not you realize it, you do have some melody going on when you speak. The trick is to learn to control it and manipulate it to your advantage. Okay, let's start with the basics. What is melody? Well, if you were to sit down at a piano and play one key at a time in any particular pattern that you wished, you'd be creating a melody. Now, there are, of course, some melodies that might be considered better than others. For example, Mozart was pretty good at coming up with melodies that'll last for an eternity and be cherished, whereas the melody of "Shake Your Booty" by Casey and the Sunshine Band might someday lose its timeless appeal. I'm not asking any of you to become fabulous composers. That isn't necessary at all. Melody, as it relates to communication, is extremely easily created. When a professional songwriter crafts the melody to a song, it's designed to create the perfect emotion to help bring the lyrics to life. A great song can make you cry or dance or remember a special moment in time. When a baby lies in a crib and the mobile plays a melody. When a new mother rocks that baby to sleep, there's a melody she sings in her lullaby. When we learn the alphabet, we learn it with a melody. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. When we learn to count, we learn it with a melody. 2 + 2 = 4, 4 and 4 are 8. That's our little inchworm. As Pocahontas sings in the Disney musical, "Learn to sing with all the voices of the mountain, need to paint with all the colors of the wind." She's just simply bringing attention to the fact that there's music all around us, from the breeze to the brook. If we broke the sounds down to their lowest elements, they're all just melodies. Next, I want to talk about breaking out of monotone. A while back, I took my 3-year-old to her first day of preschool. In the middle of the session, this tall man entered the room and said in a loud, bassy, monotone voice, "Hello, I'm Ed, your coach. Please form one line and we'll proceed outside to play." And the kids just sat there in their seats. Now, most 3-year-olds love the word play and they're easily excitable, but Coach Ed's message left them cold. He might have been the most energetic and fun guy in the whole world, but his voice gave him no clue. 17 preschoolers heard the sound that came out of Ed's mouth and had no desire to follow him anywhere. At this point, your voice possesses dozens of vocal tones and shadings to use. But like Coach Ed, you may not be incorporating them into the way you speak every day. I'd like you to tune in now to how much variation you're putting into your speaking voice. Pick up a book or a paper and record your voice reading any passage you like. And as you play back the tape, listen especially for how low and how high your voice goes. How much melody? Does your voice swoop and soar all over the keyboard, or does it remind you of my daughter's PE coach? You have almost 3 octaves of range to play with, so I encourage you to move the notes around a bit. Listen to me and you'll hear an example of what I'm talking about. I'm emphasizing variety in my voice as I speak, giving it a lot of melody. I'm going up a lot and I'm going down a lot. I'm moving all around the spectrum. As you experiment in this way, you'll no doubt come up with some goofy melodies that you'll never use, but you'll also stumble upon some sounds and qualities that you do want to incorporate. Okay, put the program on pause. Go read your passage into the tape recorder. You'll get the best results if you spend time consciously exaggerating the highs and lows and moving into areas that you're not used to. In other words, by going way over the top as you experiment with melody, that's not how you'll end up sounding once you get to the end of the rainbow. But I need you to hear yourself making silly, ridiculous melodies so that as you scale back to your new normal, it'll be sufficiently different and better than the old way that you used to speak. Like I said, every time you speak, you're making a melody. On a piano, I can actually find the specific notes you're playing. Let me show you what I mean. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. How's your daughter? She's fine. How about your mother? Well, she's fine. What about your dog? Is she fine also? If I just look on the piano to find the notes that I'm speaking, I realize that I'm actually saying words and attaching a particular melody to them all the time. I just don't realize it until somebody breaks out a piano and brings it to my attention. So you do have a melody. It's just that if your melody was put into a song, it might be a very boring song. And why would anyone continue to listen over and over to a boring, bad song? Well, they wouldn't, and neither would you. The answer is to create a simple, beautiful melody that underscores everything you say. An amount of melody that keeps your audience entertained and interested and wondering what you're going to say next. Now, the last thing I said here is very important. Keep the audience guessing what you're going to say next. People read novels from the beginning to the end. If they read the end first, that would blow the surprise or destroy the mystery or ruin the cliffhanger. People go to a scary movie and they scream at the elements of surprise. A director like Alfred Hitchcock knew how to keep his audience on the edge of their seats. So why can't we use a bit of this magic when we speak? The answer is, we can. And melody is the easy and effective way to make that happen. So here's how it works. If I speak all the time using the same pitches, the audience starts to memorize these notes and begins to recognize them when they hear them. They don't have to have perfect pitch to be conscious of the same notes, hitting them over and over and over. I'm pounding them into their head. So, after a very short period of time, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, the audience thinks it knows what sound I'm going to make next. When that happens, you're in trouble. Because if they think they know what sound you're going to make next, then they don't bother to listen as much. They decide somewhere in their minds that if they know what sound you're going to make, they also know what words you're going to speak. And if I know the end to a murder mystery, I'm not going to read the beginning. People have incredibly short attention spans. If they think they already know what you're going to say, the conversation is pretty much over. So the goal is to use melody as a type of variation tool to always keep them guessing. If my voice moves up and down like the melody to a great song that you love to hear, why wouldn't you love to hear my voice almost as much as listening to your favorite song? It might be easier for you to get an idea of just how to do this by trying the following exercise. I call it sing-song exercise one. I'm going to sing a line of a conversation, and then I want you to sing it right back to me. Just try to imitate what I do. Then I'm going to speak the same line, and you're going to speak it right after me. Now, I'm trying to give you an idea of just how much melody I'm looking for. Honey, I'm home. Try it. Now, honey, I'm home. Now say it. The next line. How was your day? Now I'm going to speak it. How was your day? Now you speak it. My turn. I had lunch with Bob today, and he told me to say hello. Go ahead. Don't think this is silly. Now I'm going to speak it. I had lunch with Bob today, and he told me to say hello. Go ahead, speak it. Next line. I was listening to the news, and they said that it'll be sunny all week. Go ahead. Now say it. I was listening to the news, and they said it's going to be sunny all week. Speak it. Last line. Why don't we take the kids to the park and have a picnic? Now I'm going to say it. Why don't we take the kids to the park and have a picnic? The goal of this sing-song exercise one is to simply get you into a place where you're singing out, not paying any attention to the melody, and then you're trying to at least try to speak with some remnant of the same energy, the same power, and the same passion. I know that you're probably muttering, no way, but I challenge you to try this. I know you'll hear more thickness, more energy, and more pitch variation than you generally put in your regular speaking voice. Forget about sounding ridiculous here. I told you from the beginning this would be unique content. I'm offering you a secret weapon that up until now you didn't even know existed. Don't feel funny about adding so much melody. I promise by the time we have all of the rest of the building blocks of voice in place, it'll all come together and you won't feel silly at all. Okay, the next exercise I call Happy Birthday Exercise 2. Look at your calendar or appointment book and write down 4 things you have scheduled to do in the next week. For example, see my brother or mail the packages, meet Bob at the restaurant, and then attach them to the melody of Happy Birthday. Here's a little sample for you. I'm going to have lunch with Joe. Then I'm getting a haircut. After that, I'm going to the laundry, pick up dinner and go home. You can also try it with a more negative message. Profits are down. I just crashed the car. My wife says she hates me. My dog ate my shoe. Now, did you notice that even though I was saying negative things, you really didn't feel all that sad for me? As a matter of fact, because I attached the words to such a happy melody, you discounted the negative and was only thinking happy thoughts. That's what the right amount of melody can do. Get used to listening to what happens when your voice goes low and high. Notice that because of the turns, pauses, and longer notes in the music, you're stressing certain syllables, giving emphasis to particular words. This is no dull monotone, and you can let the variety and energy you just sang into the same words you speak every day. Let's pause the program now and go ahead and try the Happy Birthday exercise. Now let's look at a little thing I call use the news. You can also practice varying the pitches and stresses of your voice by imitating the reporters and anchors on the daily news program. I don't recommend this style of speaking as an ideal, but you can pick up a number of helpful strategies and techniques that might help you break out of that old stubborn monotone. Watch the anchorman and mirror him by saying every word that he says right after he says it. Try to imitate his volume and his melody. He says it, you say it right after him. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Give it a shot. See what happens. A newscaster's goal is most often to make a negative information sound intriguing but not depressing. Rather than giving in to the emotions tied to the news of death and devastation, they look for ways to keep a high-energy, positive sound to their voices. The feeling of energy is created in part by the way they punch particular words, making them louder or lifting the pitches for emphasis. These speakers also end nearly every sentence by either staying on the same note or going higher. So, for example, a newscaster who stays on the same pitch at the end might sound like this. It's raining, it's snowing, but you can go out in your bare feet. In your bare feet. Bare feet. Same note. If I would have gone down, so you can go out in your bare feet. So you can just go out in your bare feet. So if I would have gone up, it's raining, it's snowing, there's a blizzard, but you can go out in your bare feet. You can go out in your bare feet. Bare feet. You see, in regular conversation, most of us get to the end of the sentence and we just drop the pitches, which releases tension and pretty much lowers any feeling of intensity. All of the intensity that we'd begun to create. But by ending on the same pitch or going higher, news voices sustain the feeling of hopefulness and leave you wanting to hear what comes next. Because most of us end a question by going up in pitch at the end. Is that mine? Don't you think I sound better than him? When the melody goes up, it engages the listener in a bit of mental interactiveness. They get the feeling that you're asking a question and wanting to hear their response. Remember, some of this melody stuff is very subconscious. You have melodies pre-attached to more things in your brain than you realize. Like if somebody asked you to recite the alphabet but not sing it, you'd still chunk the letters in the same pattern, exactly the same as when you learned that ABC song. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. You'd always take the same pauses of the song even when you're not supposed to sing it. So go ahead and experiment with the sing song and the happy birthday exercises. I know they might feel a little artificial, but you can use them as a springboard to more natural ways of speaking with a lot of melody and variety. It's easy to turn this kind of variation into a parody, as performers like Gary Owens and John Lovitz do. I know that those of you who make a lot of presentations or speak often in public are wary of the sing-songy cadences of the professional speaker's voice, or a stagey kind of broadcaster's voice, in which inconsequential words get emphasized. I love it! It is beautiful! Tell me that again! Don't worry. I don't want you to wind up with a voice that's varied just for the sake of novelty. You'll come to realize that melody is one of the most important tools at your disposal to create true vocal power and influence and move your audience emotionally. So let me go ahead and demonstrate my 1 to 10 scale for melody. 1 is down here, absolutely no melody at all. My name is Johnny One Note, and that's the only note I can ever say, and I'm totally boring, and nobody ever goes out with me on Friday night. And as I start to add a little more melody, I move up into a 2, where I might have at least a couple of notes happening every so often. I might go up a little. And then if I start adding a little more melody, I might have a few notes. La-da-da-da-da, you might hear some of those notes happening. And as I start to get into a 4 and 5, it starts to sound a little bit more normal, that I can go low and that I can go high a little bit. And as I move to a 6 and a 7, I'm still having a lot more melody, where I take some chances every now and again and I go higher than I normally do. And 8 and a 9, is there's a ton more melody. I'm starting to sound like I really have a lot of personality, maybe too much personality. And a 10 is way over the top. I just don't know whether I'm on a boat or standing on solid ground. In the next session, we'll learn about pitch, tone, and pace.